Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Donald Trump's national security team now taking shape, scraped from the bottom of the barrel since most of the Republican cream at the top signed a letter protesting Trump and, given his vindictive and punitive nature, are now out in the cold. We will examine the Benghazi-bashing Tea Party ideologue to head up the CIA, Putin's favorite American general heading the National Security Council, and an admiral about to be fired as head of the NSA who met with Trump last Thursday to artlessly make a deal, the details of which are open to speculation. CIA veteran Robert Baer, the author of four New York Times bestsellers, who is currently the National Security Affairs Analyst at CNN, joins us to discuss a team of dunces in charge of intelligence at a time when tensions between the two nuclear powers are on the rise and sober professionals are needed to deal with a paranoid kleptocrat in the Kremlin who could soon be facing off against an unstable amateur in the White House with a surplus of ego and a deficit of knowledge. Then we'll look further into the frightening lineup of crusaders and petty partisans, incompetents and ideologues at the front line of the nation's defense, serving a commander-in-chief who will have 5 minutes to determine the fate of the world should a real or false nuclear attack warning come our way. James Bamford, an investigative journalist specializing in national security issues and author of The Puzzle Palace and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to Spying on America, joins us to discuss efforts to fire the head of the NSA who, as a serving admiral, was seriously out of line meeting with Trump to either save his job, get the job as the new DNI, or engage in something beyond the fevered imagination of conspiracy theorists. Then finally, we will speak with David Mindich, a professor and former chair of Media Studies and Digital Arts at St. Michael's College, the author of Tuned Out, Why Americans Under 40 Don't Follow the News, and Just the Facts, How Objectivity Came to Define American Journalism, joins us to discuss the role of fake news in the election and how the Republicans pressured Facebook to turn editorial control of aggregating news over to algorithms that ended up helping Trump. And joining us now is Robert Baer, one of the most accomplished agents in the CIA's history, the winner of the Career Intelligence Medal. He's the author of four New York Times bestsellers, including See No Evil and Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude. He's considered one of the world's foremost authorities on the Middle East and is the current National Security Affairs Analyst for CNN. And his latest book is The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassinations. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baer.
Good to be back.
And there's an awful lot going on in the national security world with Donald Trump's appointments, which have alarmed many. Prior to these appointments, of course, most of the top professionals in the national security on the bench, if you will, wrote letters saying they have nothing to do with Trump. So out of the gate, he had pretty slim pickings, and he's chosen some very ideological people, Congressman Pompeo, the Tea Party congressman, for the head of the CIA, General Flynn, as the National Security Advisor, and there's also some strange goings on with the head of the National Security Agency, Admiral Mike Rogers, and now he's talking about Mad Dog Mattis, the general, Marine General, as Secretary of Defense. But let's start with your former employer, the Central Intelligence Agency. My understanding about intelligence has always been that you're supposed to be skeptical, non-ideological. You're supposed to not have any preconceived notions. And the idea of putting a very partisan ideologue in charge of the CIA is an absolute anathema. It's like putting Dracula in charge of the blood bank.
Exactly. I mean, Ian Pompeo, there's nothing to recommend him. It's not like he's a professional with political views. He's been on the House Intelligence Committee, but that doesn't really qualify you for anything. You know, at least with Brennan, he spent many years in the CIA, been executive director. He served in a station overseas and on. You may not agree with what he did to the CIA, but he certainly knew it as well as anybody. And Porter Goss, another congressman, Republican, had worked in the CIA and been head of the Intelligence Committee. He had all sorts of qualifications, but really, the only thing we know about this man is that he pushed the Benghazi witch hunt, and that's what it was. I mean, at the end of the day, we just got to see the ambassador put himself in harm's way and paid for it, going to Benghazi. It wasn't there was no complicity of the Secretary of State. People simply refuse to look at the fact that ambassadors decide where they're going to go in their country and where they don't. It wasn't Hillary Clinton's decision, nor, you know, the whole idea. And you just go on and on about Benghazi. It's been so worked over. And then his visceral hate for this Iranian agreement, which with all of its downsides is better than war with Iran. So I think what we're seeing with Trump is that he is, you know, all these wild statements, and we all make wild statements, but not running for president. But I think he's going to carry through. I think if you look at this appointment to the CIA, we're probably the whole issue of torture is going to come up again, waterboarding.
Well, McCain warned against that, by the way, saying that if they try that, it'll be in the courts in a New York minute, is what he said.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more concerned about, you know, Trump easily could have taken a professional from the ranks of the CIA. He could have taken any number of retired people I know, who were pro-Trump and put them in. So taking somebody who's a creation of the Koch brothers and putting them in, and of course, if we see an EPA appointment of a global warming denier, it's pretty well, we're getting a view of where this is all going, is that the things he said we assumed were for dramatic purposes and, you know, to rile up the base. He may believe in them.
Well, there's quite a few Koch brothers alumni in this Trump administration, not the least of which is the Vice President Mike Pence, who many think will be doing a lot of the heavy lifting if Trump takes a more ceremonial role. What do you think is the end game here with these ideologues like Pompeo, like Mike Flynn? And we don't know what's going on with Admiral Rogers. He met with Trump last Thursday in New York. They're trying to fire him, both the Secretary of Defense and the Director of National Intelligence. For some months now, I've been trying to fire the head of the NSA. So he shows up in New York and has a meeting with Trump. It looks as though he's sort of trying to keep his job, but I don't know what kind of transactions went on there. I guess we can only guess.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, he is an admiral, serving admiral, and they are supposed to stay out of politics, so that means you don't actually go see the president until he's sworn in, and then he becomes the commander-in-chief. You know, was he looking for a better job? Was he looking to stay in? Was he passing some warning along? We can only speculate. But I think the important thing is that standards that we took for granted are going away. I mean, all these conflicts of interest with Flynn, the fact that he was working with Russians, RT, and paid speeches in Russia, which is, at the end of the day, a KGB state, and, you know, connections with Turkey and even General Mattis. He's you know, conflicted from here to Sunday with failed companies. He's doing favors for Theranos. What's that's the name of the company that failed in, right, when he was in Afghanistan. Right. So I think that the Trump administration is looking at standards that Washington used to hold civil servants up to is passé.
So is America sort of, since he has this peculiar romance with Putin, Donald Trump, and Russian oligarchs, and of course what really went on there during the election and before, and what these ties are, have never been fully revealed, and many people think that if they were, they might well be impeachable. But at the end of the day, this fascination with Putin and the oligarchy, that this gangster kind of kleptocracy in Russia, are we going to become like Putin's Russia under Trump? Is that the end?
I don't know, but I think we're going to be more unpredictable. The thing with the Trump administration is, the way I see it, and even you look at Flynn and some of the other people, is that just sometimes they're brutally honest and absolutely correct. When Flynn went on about we were losing in Afghanistan and that they were cooking the books back in Washington, he was absolutely right. I mean, it's sort of like Trump's stand against the Iraq war. Now, he wasn't against it when the invasion occurred, but later on he saw, you know, the establishment. And I think we all sort of dislike the establishment. But I think going back to the appointments, that's sort of key. I had hoped, you know, hope against all hope, that he would put some sort of politically neutral people in, but so far it's not. And he's going, but he's clearly with Flynn and Mattis. He's going to take on the Pentagon, which is going to be another war that I can't even tell you where that's going to go.
Yeah, but he said in the campaign that he's just going to throw money at the Pentagon, and they're not averse to that, surely.
Well, there's politics in the Pentagon that it's difficult for us to understand, you know, fights between conventional forces and Joint Special Operations command, the SEALs, that in the SEALs and Delta and the rest of it. We don't really, it's just that we're running warfare inside the Pentagon, and it's unclear to me what side he's going to take.
Right.
And then you do things like drones, which is another part, which I think Obama has failed on that. The drones haven't gotten us anything, except stirring up more problems in the Middle East. So, you know, he's just untested. The fact is, he didn't expect to be president. He ran as a marketing strategy for his company, and the day when he was elected president, he was as surprised as anybody.
And
so he's not really prepared to put a team in that's coherent or logical. Go back to Iran. I mean, we are effectively fighting on the side of Iran in Iraq and Syria by bombing. We're their air force by going after these Islamic State areas. So, I mean, how do you take this de facto ally like Iran and then turn on them and expect the Iranians to anyway play ball with us in these two countries, Iraq and Syria? So there's I don't think he's got the subtlety and the understanding of the Middle East to play this game. So, you know, it's all a learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
I simply do not know whether Pence and Trump can learn fast enough.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert Baers, one of the most accomplished agents in CIA history and the winner of the Career Intelligence Medal. He's the author of four New York Times bestsellers, including See No Evil and Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude, and is considered one of the world's foremost authorities on the Middle East and is the current National Security Affairs Analyst for CNN. And his latest book is The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassinations. And I guess we can speculate about, you say Trump was taken by surprise, and it certainly, I think he was taken by surprise when he got the nomination. And then, of course, when he got the presidency, it's a bit like the last scene in that Robert Redford movie, The Candidate, where, what do I do now? But he...
It's more like somebody calls us up and says, you want to go bungee jumping next year. You're sipping your beer at the bar, and next year comes around, and you know, you're put up against this. I mean, does he turn it over to Pence, an evangelical Christian, to conduct our foreign policy, move the embassy to
Jerusalem?
Right. You know, that would just add problems. Do they go in and support Assad?
Well, they're certainly signaling that, but if there was indeed a coup, which there appears to have been at the FBI, in the sense that there's no other way, as far as I can tell, to interpret what Comey did, I'm not sure that it wasn't just personal, that these right-wing Catholics inside the Republicans inside the FBI couldn't stomach the idea of a feminist woman president who's pro-choice. But there's no question that Comey... did his best to tip the scales, and both Hillary Clinton says that that's why she lost, and so does Corey Lewandowski, Trump's guy. So that's something to think about, what the motives that were there. We know what the results were, but we don't know what the motives were. Do you have a comment on that?
If you look at the totality of it, you see people in Washington hedging their bets. And did Comey hedge his bets after giving Hillary Clinton a pass on the first round? And then, he could say, absolutely proper, you know, to go back and say, hey, we don't have all the evidence, I could have been wrong, and then, or was it a conspiracy? We'll never know. No one's ever going to tell us.
Sure.
But you look at the totality of it, and people on the left and the Democrats are looking at a right-wing coup d'etat, national security.
It's a right-wing coup d'etat, but it's not even the farm team. It's the conspiracy of dunces here. I mean, this is the scary part. There's no talent. I mean, Trump's motto was "Make America Great Again." You know, the motto of the opposition should be "Make America Smart Again." We're led by some ideologues who aren't particularly smart, and they'll take us off the cliff.
I think so many of this. I mean, everybody's absolutely right about fake news reports. Or you take Alex Jones,
right?
And or Breitbart, and if those become the standards for veracity, we're definitely in trouble. A lot of this is on the left too. It's all of us. I mean, the internet, I truly believe, is destroying our minds day by day.
Right. So just back to General Flynn, the former Defense Intelligence Agency chief, who was apparently run out at the agency because of the way he ran it. He claims it was because they wouldn't call Islamic terrorism Islamic terrorism. So, and of course, most people think that it's the worst thing in the world to have a new crusader running the so-called war on terror, because it's just going to turn everybody off the, you know, billion plus Muslims, not to mention Muslims in this country who are already feeling extremely uncomfortable.
Well, what about Saudi Arabia? I mean, you and I talk about it all the time, about it's sort of the seat of this Islamic insanity, but is this administration capable of actually turning on it in a major way, which I think we agree that for all its sins, the collapse of Saudi Arabia, especially, with the United States behind it, in some sort of fashion, it would be a disaster. I hate to say this, but looking badly back at George W. fondly.
the bar's definitely been lowered. But you came to Flynn's defense a little earlier in the conversation, and it's my understanding that he also got Syria right at the time when Hillary Clinton was writing Assad off and saying it's just a matter of time before he goes. Wasn't it the Defense Intelligence Agency that said, no, he's not going to go. The Alawites are not going to go. Turkey was also believing that he was going to go. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, I mean, he's gotten a lot of things right. And all these people, I mean, the whole Trump insurgency against Washington, there's a reason for this.
Right,
it didn't come out of nowhere.
But is he going to drain the swamp? Is that just campaign rhetoric?
Well, all of his business meetings makes you wonder. He's been meeting with his Indian business partners. You'd think he'd have better things to do.
Right.
Worry about the Trump brand. So I just don't know. I think he's one of these guys that thinks that the business of America is business.
Well, he may not be wrong there, but
yeah.
It's not supposed to be conducted out of the White House. So, but what about the neocon connection? Michael Ledeen, who I say with great pride threatened to sue me once, he co-wrote the book with Flynn, so The Field of Fight, which lays out Flynn's philosophy, which many people think is quite Islamophobic. What does that portend? If Bolton gets the Secretary of State, then it's all over, isn't it? The neocons are back.
Yeah, I think it's clear. I mean, by the end of next week, I think you're going to know where we're going to go. These people are simply not going to sit for their ideologues saying that we've changed our minds and we're going to adopt Obama's approach to the Middle East, which is hands off. I think they're going to get into it, and they're going to get into the very much controlled by Likudniks and Netanyahu.
Well, that's the connection between the son-in-law Kushner and the Mercers, the biggest donors, the hedge fund family, who are pushing for Bolton because he's going to go to war against Iran, right?
Yeah, I talk about a catastrophe. you know.
But how do you gel that? Here you are, you know, in a de facto alliance with Iran and Russia, at least in complicity. At the same time, you go to war against Iran. I mean, you want to make better ties with
Russia. That's what I'm talking about, the schizophrenia.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't think you call Trump a Manchurian candidate, but he's not. I mean, he's too unpredictable. He's too independent. Right. And I just don't think he cares anymore about whatever the Russians have on him or hacking his email. I mean, he puts everything he thinks he puts on Twitter.
Right, but I think, though, that what Putin's getting out of this is not so much the Manchurian candidate. It's the fact that Trump's going to weaken America.
That's what Putin thinks, but Putin cannot get inside Trump's mind.
Well, I don't think anybody can. And
yeah, I think Putin may find himself hoisted by his own petard. I mean,
right. Well, I believe that some of the people in Russia tried to tell Putin that. You know, he fired his chief of staff, who was an old pro at the KGB, because he was telling him the truth and saying it's crazy to meddle in the American elections. You know, he got rid of Medvedev, who also warned him against this. So, you know, Putin's not listening to anybody. He's surrounded by sycophants. So it's pretty scary. Trump's surrounded by alt-right ideologues. Putin's surrounded by sycophants, many of them that are young, who never experienced what the Soviet Union was like and don't realize how screwed up communism was, and therefore they think, you know, their greatness was stolen from them by the West.
No, it's combustible. You know, Putin could easily miscalculate, and for instance, the Russians could do something, you know, go to the Baltics or even Poland or something, and then just infuriate Trump. And who knows what he would do at that point? I mean, we have been misplaying the Russian card, including Clinton and Obama, from day one, and it could get worse very fast. And that's why I would prefer to have a very experienced, level-headed national security team in there.
Well, Robert Baer, on that note, I thank you for joining us here today.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Robert Baer, one of the most accomplished agents in CIA history and the winner of the Career Intelligence Medal. He's the author of four New York Times bestsellers, including See No Evil and Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude, and is considered one of the world's foremost authorities on the Middle East and is the current National Security Affairs Analyst for CNN. And his latest book is The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassinations. And we're going to take a brief station break and back, looking further into Donald Trump's national security team.
I'm more important in the USA than a spy for the FBI. I'm trained to meet the criminal elite, and I seek out wherever evil resides.
I'm sure you even know if I'm asleep or having sex. I said, hey, 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 NSA.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is James Bamford, an investigative journalist specializing in national security issues. He is the columnist for Foreign Policy Magazine, was the Washington investigative reporter for ABC's World News Tonight, and is the author of the best-selling books Body of Secrets, The Puzzle Palace, A Pretext for War, 9/11 Iraq, and the Abuse of America's Intelligence Agencies, and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to Spying on America. He also writes for Wired magazine and produced the PBS special Cyber War Threat. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Bamford.
Thanks very much, Ian.
And I understand, James, that the both the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, and the Secretary of Defense, Ashton Carter, were trying to fire Admiral Rogers, the head of the NSA. They wanted to split the NSA and the Cyber War Command apart. Of course, I just mentioned the CBS special Cyber War Threat that you did. But the most amazing thing of all, though, is this meeting that took place on Thursday at Trump Tower between the head of the NSA, who's under threat of being fired, or people are trying to ease him out. He meets with Trump. It's completely unacceptable for a serving admiral to meet with a president-elect who is not the commander-in-chief and the president. And we don't know what he was up to, whether he's trying to, you know, save his job or become the next DNI or whatever else he could have been up to. I mean, how does it strike you?
Well, you know, looking at Mike Rogers, Admiral Mike Rogers' background, I think he saw the writing on the wall that he was about to be fired. He was really incompetent. One of the reasons he was brought in there was to clean up the mess after the Snowden leaks, where Snowden was accused of walking out with 1.7 million pages of documents. And during the time Rogers was there, the material kept walking out. They lost actual weapons, cyber weapons, that turned up on the Internet that were taken by some insider. And then somebody else who had been stealing information before and during Rogers' time, Martin managed to walk out with 50 terabytes. That's about half a billion pages of documents. So that, and the fact that he was fairly ineffective in his work against ISIS and so forth, they were planning on firing him. So I think he had two goals in mind going up to New York. One was to see if he could either keep his keep staying in his current job, or else see if he could get elevated to the job of Clapper's old job, which was, or Clapper's current job, which is Director of National Intelligence.
But we don't know how this struck Trump. I mean, you know, the last thing that anybody's going to deal with is the problem. You mentioned both Snowden and Harold T. Martin III. Both work for Booz Allen Hamilton, this contractor. I mean, nobody's doing anything about that fundamental problem, which are these contractors who've taken over Washington.
Well, exactly. I was in a small group that was attending a talk by the former NSA director, General Alexander, and that was one of the questions I asked him. I said, what about accountability at NSA? Nobody ever gets fired there, despite all this, these things that are taking place. And he said, well, I offered my resignation, but it wasn't accepted. And I think that's one of the key reasons that he was on the chopping block for being fired. You know, it's also very dangerous when you have the head of the most secret intelligence agency in the country, and not only the largest intelligence agency, but also one that has the ability of launching cyber wars, because he's also commander of Cyber Command, taking off his uniform and sneaking up to New York to meet with the head of the incoming administration, who's a completely different party. I mean, you know, if you're trying to instill confidence in the NSA for not doing things sub rosa or whatever against the American public, that's not the way to do it.
So when Senator McCain says that he's going to fight against any idea of placing Cyber Command under its own leadership because he believes that it needs to be part of the NSA because that's dependent upon NSA capabilities, what do you make of that argument?
Well, I think it's all sort of bureaucratic. No matter how you slice it, whether you're going to have a separate director or two separate directors or one director, it's pretty much all the same thing. The two organizations come under two different laws. I mean, that's one of the reasons. It's fairly complicated to get into it. It doesn't really make much difference. They're both going to do the same thing anyway. But one of the things that really isn't getting much attention is the CIA. Because there are three players when it comes to cyber war. The NSA is not really allowed to actually launch a war. It's only allowed to sneak in, look for material, steal steal secrets and explore foreign computer systems and so forth. Cyber Command is allowed to launch a cyber war, but only during, by law, only during times of war. But the CIA is the agency that's used for launching cyber wars covertly. It's in charge, basically, of covert cyber wars. It was the CIA that actually launched Stuxnet against Iran, for example. And now you've got Mike Pompeo, who's now going to head the CIA, who's an extreme hawk when it comes to Iran and cyber and all these issues. So you've really got the perfect storm here with Flynn, the National Security Advisor, General Flynn, former head of the DIA, Pompeo, head of the CIA, and whoever they're going to put in at the NSA, either keeping Rogers there after he apparently gets fired or quits in the next couple of weeks, or putting some other hardline right-wing Republican in there.
Well, today on Meet the Press, the Donald Trump's chief of staff, Reince Priebus, the former head of the Republican National Committee, he was asked about whether they're going to set up a Muslim registry, you know, basically,
right,
to go after Muslims and in the way that they rounded up Japanese in World War II. And he refused to say that it wouldn't happen, although he said it's not going to be quite as draconian as perhaps as the Japanese example. The point being that Islamophobia comes in with a tidal wave with General Flynn as the National Security Advisor, one of the most important positions in the government. Flynn's a dyed-in-the-wool, I mean, an extreme Islamophobe. I just quote him, "Fearing Islam, which wants 80% of humanity enslaved or exterminated, is totally rational and hence cannot possibly be called a phobia." Well, that's true. That's if you're, a Saudi Wahhabi, you believe that. And the Saudi Wahhabis have been a poisonous influence on Islam. But that's no way to characterize Islam. I mean, that is, you know, ridiculous.
Well, he's had that reputation for a long time. And he also has this reputation for not really getting the facts right. They actually, at DIA, when he was working there, they had a term for it. It was called Flynn facts, which meant that they were utterances of General Flynn, but not exactly facts. So you couple that with the fact that he's also this enormous hawk, not only on Islamophobia, but on using the intelligence community as a weapon. One of the reasons he got fired was he tried to turn DIA into another CIA by putting 1,000 clandestine operators in there. And that was one of the reasons that Clapper fired him. So you get these people who are extreme hawks and with a tendency towards Islamophobia. And all we're going to do is expand the terrorist problems we have. I just am not looking forward to the next 4 years.
But ideologues in intelligence are the worst possible people. One, because, you know, Putin can play them like a violin because they're so predictable. But two, when you talk about Flynn facts as opposed to real facts, Here he is in the most important position, right next to the commander-in-chief in terms of the flow of military and intelligence information. He's the conduit that goes to the president, who has the button, the nuclear button. And if this guy is not dealing with facts, then we are truly screwed, because that's where you most need facts. Whether or not, if you've got 5 minutes to decide whether to end the world, if there's a warning, a nuclear warning or a nuclear attack warning, it's quite often they've proven to be false in the past. So this is what scares the hell out of me. You've really got to have people that are grounded in reality in that job as the president's national security advisor.
Well, Well, exactly. And you, so you have the two top national security people, the president and his national security advisor, who both have don't really care much about real facts and prefer opinions and theories and so forth, as opposed to what really is happening. And their tendency is to, when in doubt, launch some activity of an attack or a Stuxnet type attack. And I think that's where the first evidence of this will come about is with cyber. The cyber button is under their fingers now, and we only launched one real cyber war, actually the first war in U.S. history in terms of cyber, when we attacked Iran. And that didn't turn out too well, because shortly after we did it, everybody realized, even though they were trying to keep it covert, everybody discovered that we had done it, and then Iran turned around and attacked one of our oil suppliers, Saudi Aramco, destroying 30,000 of their computers, and then they attacked U.S. banks. So the problem with this is, and again, I think cyber is where we're going to get the first indications of this aggressive activity. The problem with that is the U.S. is the most vulnerable country. So if you're talking nuclear weapons, there's only a few countries that really have them, but any country that has, you know, a 12-year-old with a computer can do a cyber attack. And that, during this election, you could see was a very powerful tool to be used throughout the election. So I think that's going to be one of the key focuses, at least early focus of the administration, is launching cyber attacks against Iran and other countries, particularly Iran, because all these people that Trump has appointed are very much against the Iran deal.
Well, you mentioned, James Bamford, that you've got an ideologue who has a loose relationship with the facts as the National Security Advisor and the president, who has an even looser relationship with the facts as in Donald Trump. But you have to add a third person there who's an ideologue, and that's the new head of the CIA, this Tea Party congressman who ginned up the whole Benghazi thing, which he beat to death. And that's a complete phony. It always was. And the Republicans know it's a phony. They know that why the ambassador went there in the first place, and nobody wants to talk about that. And it's all on his head, unfortunately. And, you can't beat a dead man. But instead, they decided to use Hillary Clinton as a scapegoat, and we know where that's gotten them. So this guy is really not a very neither qualified or in any way a decent person, from what I can tell. But here he is now, Pompeo. Can you imagine what the PDFs are going to be like, the PDBs, the presidential daily briefings are going to be? If he's in charge of them, that's what the president gets every day. That's the reality call, the wake up. You know, and somebody recently said to me, well, Trump's really going to be educated quickly because he'll be getting the presidential daily briefing, which tells you about the way the world is. So no matter how ideological you are, you're going to have to wake up to reality. Well, if this bozo is going to be creating Trump's reality, God help us.
Well, exactly. And, it's very dangerous when you put an ideologue, a political ideologue, instead of the agency that's supposed to give independent, nonpartisan advice to the president. I guess nobody told Trump that if you want independent advice, it's not good to put your one of the most fierce ideologues in there. Pompeo's also been one of the leading people on defending torture, for example. So you have both Trump and Pompeo who are basically in favor of bringing back the old torture policies. And both of them, feel sorry for Snowden. Both Trump and Pompeo have come out publicly and said that he should be executed. So, you're really getting the far right here coming in, and I don't think people really realize yet how drastic this these changes are going to be.
Well, just in closing, James Bamford, there's also the last piece of the national security mosaic, and that is the biggest one of all, the Department of Defense, which dwarfs everything in terms of intelligence. And that's likely to be in the hands of General Mad Dog Mattis, the Marine General, who's had all kinds of squirrely posts once he got out, through the revolving door. He's been involved with all kinds of defense contractors, many of whom are gone bankrupt and are quite shady to begin with.
Right, yeah. I mean, putting somebody with the nickname Mad Dog instead of the Pentagon would be right up Trump's alley, I think, at this point. Yeah, he's also had quotes like, it's fun to shoot people, and telling troops at one point, be polite, be professional, but have a plan to kill everybody you meet, and so forth. So he'd fit right in. The problem, however, with him is that he is a former general. He's only been out for a few years, and by law he has to wait 7 years before he can be appointed as Secretary of Defense. However, there's a obviously the Congress, if they want, they could vote for a waiver allowing him to come in. So, and you have a very Republican Congress, so it's possible he can be the next Secretary of Defense. They haven't confirmed that yet, but he's certainly in the running.
Well, let's hope these Democrats have found some, courage, which they certainly were lacking in the campaign in terms of confirmation hearings on both the new Attorney General and his racism, on the head of the CIA and his partisanship and ideological blindness, or blinders, I should say. And then finally, if Mad Dog Mattis is the head of the Pentagon, then they'll have to have a hearing on that as well. So on that note, James, I thank you again for joining us.
My pleasure, Ian. Appreciate being on your program.
And I do too. And again, I've been speaking with James Bamford, an investigative journalist specializing in national security issues. He is a columnist for Foreign Policy and was the Washington investigative reporter for ABC's World News Tonight, and is the author of the best-selling books Body of Secrets, The Puzzle Palace, A Pretext for War, 9/11, Iraq and the Abuse of America's Intelligence Agencies, and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to Spying on America. He also writes for Wired magazine and produced the PBS special Cyber War 3. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back looking into the fake news epidemic and how Facebook's fake news helped Trump. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is David Mindich, who's a professor and former chair of Media Studies, Journalism, and Digital Arts at St. Michael's College. He's the author of Tuned Out, Why Americans Under 40 Don't Follow the News, and Just the Facts, How Objectivity Came to Define American Journalism. And he has an article at the Columbia Journalism Review for journalists covering Trump, A Murrow Moment. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Mindich.
Thank you for having me.
And David, one of the things that's lost in this this coverage of the fake news epidemic and the extent to which it influenced the elections, and even President Obama spoke out about it for a while, the head of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, was denying that any responsibility on the part of Facebook, and he's still sort of trying to sort of sweep it under the rug. But what our journalists and commentators and seem to miss is that prior to all this happening, a group of Republican activists put pressure on Zuckerberg to change the nature of how Facebook aggregates the news and the editors that they were using, because they accused them of having a liberal bias, which, of course, like all of these accusations coming from Republicans about the liberal media, are a straw man designed to get people to capitulate and therefore move the goalpost to the right. And that's exactly what happened. Mark Zuckerberg capitulated. And instead of having people do it, they had algorithms. And these algorithms, had the Pope endorsing Donald Trump.
Right. You know, it's actually a similar problem that Facebook faces to journalism in general, that, you know, in the face of criticism, journalists and now Facebook retreat to this idea of objectivity, like, well, we don't really affect the news. We're, you know, you can say it's an algorithm, so it's nonpartisan. We're not picking by hand the news. We're letting the algorithm do it. But really, that's hiding behind that algorithms could be biased. Algorithms, in fact, almost by definition, they're biased because they're created by humans. And the Facebook bias is interesting because one of the things is it allows for garbage to come into our news diet. The famous saying is everyone is entitled to his or her own opinion, but not his or her own facts. And what we're seeing is two sets of facts, one for people who care about facts, and then another principally for the right, who create this fantasy world. I mean, certainly there are fake news stories on the left, but the statistics that I've seen have shown that it's far far more frequent, the fake news on the right. And then you just have these two sets of facts which really don't serve anybody.
Well, you know, there may be some fake news on the left, certainly in terms of conspiracy theories. And, you know, this network I broadcast from, Pacifica, has been infected with a lot of conspiracy theorists, and it's one of the reasons why they're going bankrupt, is that sensible people have abandoned listening to Pacifica because of that stupidity. But that's pretty small potatoes compared to the media footprint of an Alex Jones. Donald Trump called after he became president to help congratulate Alex Jones for his help.
Yeah, I didn't mean in any way to imply that there's an equality between the news lies on the left and the right. The right, you know, objectively speaking, the fake news on the right really did serious damage to this election, and it was really a lot of people were duped by this. And for Facebook to deny that they had an effect and that potentially even were responsible for Trump winning the election is ridiculous, because many of us, even those of us who follow the news closely and who know about the standards of objective journalism, are following Facebook too. And it's part of my diet. And I know that I'm affected by what I see and read.
Well, let's go back then to try and trace the genesis of this fake news situation. The first thing is that it's an extraordinary quick evolution, isn't it, that Facebook, the social media giant, should become the conduit for news that, what, something like 75% or at least two-thirds of the American people is their go-to place for news. And that's obviously why the Republicans went there and said, you know, why don't you stop, you know, when they came up with their phony argument about liberal bias and managed to get the news to help them as opposed to be objective.
Yeah, you know, Facebook, when I joined pretty early on, and I remember being very hopeful about Facebook in the beginning because I thought, you know, unlike the right-wing and left-wing chat rooms of the 90s and early 2000s, Facebook at least threw people together who were not necessarily like-minded. So you had a high school friend who, if you were a conservative, you had a liberal high school friend or vice versa. And you could engage in these really interesting conversations. But in the last few years, Facebook itself has not really been a forum for knocking ideas against each other as much as really the algorithms and just the general landscape of Facebook has pushed people more towards one side or the other. So typically now you're not, people are unfriending people who don't share their political views, and they're getting different news. And so there really are like two parallel universes. And so the hope that I had about Facebook has really eroded. And now I'm really fearing that we're having two different conversations, two sets of facts, which is really dangerous. It's very important to have the facts. I was listening to Trump's administration talk about that they want to round up 2 or 3 million immigrant criminals. The New York Times had an editorial a few days ago saying actually the number of immigrants who have felonies is about 300,000. So the difference between 300,000 and 3 million is great. And it's an interesting, it's something that we need to keep in mind. So are we okay with shipping back 300,000 people with felonies? That's a different question than 3 million. If it's a different number. One is a number that's 10 times larger than the other. And it's those kinds of facts that we really need to know as they start setting up a new and potentially frightening and dangerous immigration policy.
And again, I'm speaking with David Mindich, who's a professor and former chair of Media Studies, Journalism, and Digital Arts at St. Michael's College. He's the author of Tuned Out, Why Americans Under 40 Don't Follow the News, and Just the Facts, How Objectivity Came to Define American Journalism. But David, this new regime is just beginning, and particularly with its chief strategist, Stephen Bannon, being the head of Breitbart News. That if you say it took the New York Times to bring some objectivity into the roundup of immigrants that is about to take place on the basis that there are 3 million criminals that have to be deported as opposed to 300,000, that kind of reporting is very important. But from what I understand, what Trump has in mind and what Breitbart's Bannon has in mind is that they're going to marginalize the White House press corps, not really, try and get them out of the picture as much as possible. They already hate the Washington Post and the New York Times. And they're going to funnel all of the presidential news, which is considerable. You know, the president has the ability to break news. That all the exclusives will go to Breitbart and Drudge to build up their profile in the media and to diminish the New York Times and the Washington Post. That's what we're going to be facing.
Yeah, it's outrageous and it's frightening. And it's really one of the many things that citizens who oppose and who will oppose what the Trump administration is doing, one of the things that we all will have to do is stay informed. One of the typical responses that I've heard in the last few days is, I just can't watch the news anymore. I just can't follow the news. I need a break. And, you know, I'm sympathetic to that. In All the President's Men, Bradley, played by Jason Robards, said to his reporters, rest up 15 minutes and get your asses back in gear. You know, it's like, it's time, you know, we don't have any luxury to not be paying attention. As journalists and as citizens, we need to stay informed, stay engaged, because Trump can control who he sends his news to, but we can control how informed we are.
But how can you keep America informed if two-thirds to three-quarters of Americans get their news via Facebook, and the guy in charge of Facebook, this kid that wears T-shirts and says, whoops, there's nothing wrong, you know, when it clearly is something wrong, if algorithms tell you that the Pope is endorsing Trump, and that goes viral, and all these people out there that suddenly vote for Trump, all those Catholics, working class people. So, I mean, it's crazy. So he's not taking any responsibility, yet he has the power. So what can be done in that regard?
Well, you know, one of the things that I want to do is write an op-ed that I've been thinking about actually in the last couple of days, urging Facebook to include in its news feed as a top story, like right at the top of their page, they should just find the three newspapers that have won the most Pulitzers in the last 10 years. I'm guessing that would be the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal, two left-of-center newspapers, one right-of-center newspaper, and just run their top story. Let the editors decide. This is very un-Facebook-like. But I'd like to see the top story from the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal every day. And that's, you know, at the very top, to use old newspaper parlance, above the fold. There are certainly people who are going to object to say, well, we need more voices, and we do. But if we had those three news outlets right in everyone's Facebook feed, and then we could fight over the rest of the real estate on Facebook, that would definitely be a huge plus for policy, thoughtfulness, and facts in the United States. Whether Facebook would agree to that or not, I don't know. But I just think that people who care about facts need to be pushing Facebook because it is the newsstand, you know. You walk around streets of the city that I grew up in, New York City, there are a lot fewer newsstands, but Facebook is the newsstand of America right now, Facebook and Twitter. And so we need to hold them accountable for responsible news.
And, of course, the challenge now as Trump makes America great again is for the opposition to make America smart again. And I thank you for joining us, David Mindich.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
And again, I'll be speaking with David Mindich. He's a professor and former chair of Media Studies, Journalism, and Digital Arts at St. Michael's College. He's the author of Tuned Out, Why Americans Under 40 Don't Follow the News, and Just the Facts, How Objectivity, in quotes, Came to Define American Journalism. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can scroll down on the right-hand side to subscribe to iTunes podcasts. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.